Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today's cast, we're doing a quick listener-requested focus. Well, actually, this cast and the next one. On the current state of all the Primarchs.
Where are they now?
Yeah, come on. Where are they now? Ugh, that was a terrible show. But anyway, it was just
I think you meant to say an awesome show.
It was just depressing.
What? I told you. We talked about Flock of Seagulls last week.
Depressing. Anyway. So today we're going to do the traitors. Next week we'll do the loyalists. Some of these are really easy, like Horus, and others can be a little bit longer. As always, please like and comment in the cast. Your comments and your likes are really helping boost us. It's broadening our audience to new members, which is cool for us, and we're reaching out a lot further. So all you have to do is just hit the thumb up and write a nice comment if you got some time.
And thank you.
Yeah. We also want always promote our Discord here. We've built this Discord over a year ago to be a place people could just kind of interact. Ideally, it was originally meant for us to interact with you, and then we lost control of that thing pretty quickly, and everyone started talking to each other, and that was even better. So now we've got like 3,500 members who are in there talking to each other, helping each other, really building it up. And
can you do the shout out?
We also have some mods who then took over, really ran this thing, and turned into a much better, easier to function community. Kevin, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, who spells his name wrong, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David. You guys are incredible. If it wasn't for them, I probably would have burned this thing down. those who don't understand, there are thousands of interactions at this thing daily. Yeah, it is. I would have just deleted it. Off the internet, then dealt with it. So they stepped up and took it over, and it's amazing. So please, if you're looking for a place to interact around 40K, come join our Discord. If you go to the About in the show, you'll see a link to it. Also with our Discord, we have a link to our new website and to our Patreon. The Patreon exists just to, if you guys like what we're doing and you want to help us improve the quality, keep paying the audio engineer, do all these little things. It goes a long way, and that's where we spend it.
We've got merchandise.
Yeah. We also have a website that's got merchandise on it now. It's finally up and running correctly. You can buy sweatshirts and t-shirts and dice and underwear. Yeah, there's underwear.
Oh, yeah, that was super weird, by the way.
There was no way I wasn't going to make
that. I know. I saw that. I was like, of course. And of course, it's right here.
For the record, it's only because they didn't make a banana hammock. There's 0% chance I wouldn't have made a 40K Lorecast banana hammock if I could have.
I like it.
Yeah. Just in the... You would have too. Anyway, lastly, on the website, there's a link to Brad's coaching services. 30 years of playing the game, over 10 years of coaching experience. Brad's really a great source for anyone who's looking to get into the game or just improve their game overall. He does, I mean, you can hear his personality in the cast. Brad enjoys things, and he really enjoys people and being helpful to them. So if you're looking for help in coaching,
hit me up.
Brad is there. Yeah. You can go to our website, click the link. You can go to Discord, click the link. Or we can keep messing with this spam filter.
Oh my God. My email is just... I'm getting my cheat together. You can't see it. Mm-hmm. This is the thing I do every time. Oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com. I'm getting the sigh on it because I have gotten even... I don't know if they're listening to it.
Yeah.
My God, I'm getting destroyed.
The amount of bots who just heard that.
Yes. Crushing my email.
You are getting so many timeshare.
I'm trying to weed through. If you haven't heard back from me, send me another one. It literally does get lost.
We'll just make you a new one.
It's so hard right now, dude. I get so nonsense. They're obvious bots too. It's not even close. So like, hello, fellow human. I am going like what is happening?
I have important information for you about the crypto.
It's just crazy. It'd
be funny if they were actually all real people trying to get coaching services. They just didn't have good English. And Brad's like, your English isn't strong enough for me to coach.
My English isn't strong enough.
I know, that's the point. All right, well, let's dive into this and just start with an easy one of the Primarchs. Horus Lupercal. Horus is dead.
Horus is like super mega dead.
Yeah.
No, it's a big thing that we say this, though, because when the Emperor
It's not a big thing. You like to use it. It's one of your favorite phrases. It's a big thing.
It is a big thing.
This is a big thing. Horace is dead.
He's the only person that got his soul, body, mind, and spirit cleaved out of existence.
And what bearing does that have on 41st?
I mean, it's a pretty big deal. I don't know if you heard about him. He was the War Master.
I know, but right now, in the current state of the lore.
Well, you're not resing him up. They cloned him a bunch.
They tried. It didn't go well.
Abaddon was
Abaddon does have his claw. That's right. Abaddon has his power claw.
Yeah. Also, if you try to clone what's left of Horus, Abaddon will show up at your house and have a talk with you.
Yeah. He's not a big fan of it. But all I'm saying is, if we're doing this as a where are they now, he's dead. Where Horus is now.
He's actually the most dead.
Yeah. Speaking of dead, Conrad Kurz.
I refuse to fix this.
And we apologize again for those of you who are very, I apologize, Brad doesn't.
Nope.
For those of you who are very big fans of Conrad Kurz, and we called him Conrad Kurz for 12 episodes, 15 episodes.
I'm still minimum.
Doing. Yeah. Anyway, just because we read it wrong and didn't want to deal with it.
I've read 30 years of fluff and his novels and still call him that.
Yeah. But let's go into Kurz because it actually, he does have a bit more influence on the overall modern. So during the heresy, the Night Lords ended up kind of forging their own path in support of the rebellion.
Well, they got told to go harass people, and they did that really well.
Yeah, and that was the thing. They were sent to go, hey, I need you to go harass the Dark Angels, because Horus knew they were never going to beat the Dark Angels, but Horus knew that the Night Lords could at least keep the Dark Angels from interrupting his shit.
Yeah, because the Night Hunter was going to just trash places.
Yeah. And the problem, though, is that once the Night Hunter got there, he just decided to party, for lack of a better phrase. I mean,
I don't think the people on those planets thought it was a party.
Oh, no, that wasn't. I mean, it was a nightmare for everyone involved.
Yeah.
But for Kurz, he just was like, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and,
you know, the 24-hour screaming that you couldn't turn off in your planets and all the other stuff he was doing.
But what did happen, though, and this is where Kurz is a bit more important, is that he was the ultimate antagonist to the Lion, because the Lion is watching it happen, is getting furious, but Kurz will not meet him in combat.
Oh, God, no.
Just keeps running away at the last second.
The Lion's trying to do the whole awful neutral stand and fight.
Yeah.
And Kurz is like, I'm going to go punch the guy.
I'm running away.
He's also like, I beat up the guy in the cafeteria. You're like, what? You're like, we were supposed to fight here. He's like, yeah, instead I beat up the lunch lady.
Yeah, because I didn't want to fight you, because you'll totally kick my ass.
Yeah.
Now, it did eventually work out for the Lion in that he did capture Conrad.
Yeah, and how did that work out?
Well, it took a bit. So Conrad was teleported onto the Lion's ship.
Yes, but I'm saying,
ran around his ship killing all of his friends until he eventually got captured.
I mean, To be fair, I'm using that right away. The Lion, G-Man, and Sanguinis after they had the Night Hunter.
Well, that's later. What I'm saying.
I know, but I'm saying, like, they did a comical James Bond thing of, we could kill him, or we could just turn away and make, and he'll never, ever do anything. He's definitely not going to escape.
Well, all right. So
that is 100% what happened.
No, what they did was, Sanguinis did it. We'll get there in a bit. But Sanguinis did, because he was like, all right, this is your fate. Well, there's your fate. I'm gonna shoot you in a pod out in the middle of space.
Like, I'm going to escape so soon.
Yeah. Peace out. Maybe just peace out. I got to go help the Emperor. Just shut up. So an important thing about Conrad, because we haven't covered him yet, is he was a precog, so he could see the future, but he was kind of shit at it.
He wasn't even shit at it. He also had, he's a precog.
By the way, I don't like Conrad that much. Brad loves
him. I love him.
And you're going to hear this in our tones.
Conrad is a precog that gets mind-shattering visions. He gets shitty visions of the future.
Yeah. I like how you made it sound like it was a good thing. He's a bad precog.
Well, he's also a crazy person.
He's a bad precog. That's what makes you a crazy person.
He's got great novels.
I can see the future. You can? Well, not the future, just kind of the future.
Well, then he just kind of extrapolates that and goes,
yeah,
and I'm 100% sure that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. His vision of the future is a 1 or 2 second glimpse of the future, and he's trying to infer everything off of it. So anyway, Conrad, though, he's a precog. His number one vision he had very early was his own death at the hands of an assassin and the death of his legion at the hands of the space marines, of the other space marines. And he was really determined to never have that happen.
By attacking the Imperium and setting up his Imperium own death.
And having his troops constantly fight other Space Marines.
What?
I'm not a fan.
Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
Yeah. And the issue for him is that at a certain point when we talk about this, in my opinion, Conrad just shifted over from I'm going to make these visions I'm seeing not true to let's just get this over with. That's kind of what I took it as. Like, I really think he went with originally, because in the early parts, in the early novels, he wanted to fight that being his future.
Yes. He was trying to change it. Then he felt it was inevitable. And I think
he just tried to accelerate it near the end.
Yes. No, he completely does it. Yeah, he makes his own. He made that happen.
Yeah. He took his legion and said, how about we go fight the best legion that exists? No, that
well, it's not even that. It's his own death when we get to that.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and we'll do a cast on the Night Lords in the future. It's a very, very popular trilogy, which is, you know, enough to definitely do a cast or two on. But you're kind of obviously hearing my tone and my love of that trilogy.
I will be excited about
it. Brad's super into it. I just find it.
Plus, the first book is basically Alien, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the writing's really good. I just don't find him as much of a protagonist as the book tries to make him out to be. So anyway,
he's crazy.
Kurz decides that he's just going on these basically Drukhari-esque raids. And remember, the Drukhari do not exist in the Imperium at this stage. This is M31. M30.
Imperium, of course.
Yeah, there's the Drukhari. They're, you know, they're in the Webway. They're just doing little bits of raids here and there. But a lot of at this stage, the Drukhari, as we covered last time, were actually mostly doing crappy stuff to each other. It wasn't late till later they started actually branching out of the Webway because they were terrified. The part of this that actually gets funny to me is Kurz also totally screws over Horus with this process. So Horus sends Kurz out there not just to harass the Dark Angels, but to also conquer worlds for him.
Well, he's supposed to be conquering basically Supply Depot's logistics.
Yeah.
It makes it super hard for the Dark Angels, but also makes it completely not great for Horus because Dark Angels can't lock him down because he has his forces everywhere.
Right.
But they're not doing anything. They're just
murdering populations.
They're supposed to be locking down these supplies and logistics and doing all this thing or even disrupting. And all he's doing is like, I'm just going to put all of my people in 20 different systems and just screw with everybody.
Yeah. Well, no, not screwing people. I'm going to put all of my people in 20 different systems and murder everyone in those systems. And Horus is like, yeah, but I needed like a gun shipment. And Kurz's guys are like, oh yeah, we killed every pilot on the planet.
Yeah, we mounted guns on their heads though.
Yeah.
That's kind of
fun, right?
Yeah, it's cool. We made statues with them.
Yeah, check this out.
So you're just crazy. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
it was bad for the lion though, because none of the shit he's doing makes all of the things he's doing make zero sense.
Oh yeah.
So he's having a hard time locking him down because he's like, why would you do any of this?
This makes any sense. There's no logistical purpose for this. And Conrad's buddies are like, yeah.
Exactly.
Psychopath. So yeah, effectively, Conrad, the only person who benefits from this is Conrad, is because he's just going more and more crazy by the day.
Oh, 100%.
And he's just murdering people, which is what he wants to do and his legion wants to do. So there's that. But over time, his legion begins to start to fall apart.
They devolve into warbands.
Yeah,
which is the relevance of where we're going today. Yeah. Is he made them become one of the first actually legions that's just disparate warbands. They're Night Lords, but they're
Night Lords are not organized in any way, shape, or form. So eventually, the fun story about this is the Emperor is the one who sends the assassins after him and just says, get them. Effectively, they send 50% of all Calidus assassins into the galaxy with one purpose, and that is to kill Conrad.
Kurz.
Same. Conrad Kurz. You did it.
Hurt a little bit inside, though.
Yeah. So moving forward a little bit, at the end of the Heresy, when Horus dies, the Night Lords are, to Brad's point, there's an independent body of...
No, they're big now. It's not like there's like four guys.
Well, what I'm saying is they're independent body.
I just want to say that there's still...
Oh, there's a ton of
warbands aren't like Ted and his three guys with him. These are still large. It's just not a legion. I'm just stressing because the legions at this time were just so big.
Yeah, they were. And it's a good point you made there, because what happens is the Night Lords, yes, they fought the Dark Angels and took some losses, but they didn't do the Siege of Terra.
No.
So they didn't take the big hits there. And they just decide at this point just to start spreading out throughout the galaxy. Whereas, as we'll cover with a lot of the other Chaos Legions, they fled back into the Eye of Terra. The Night Lords were just like, yeah, there's nothing there that's cool. I'm going to stay over here and just kill things.
Yeah, you basically had a legion of serial killers. Weird.
Yeah.
You keep taking people from that prison planet, but whatever.
Yeah. Although Kurz actually at this point did join his legion on some of these raids, which is why it's funny that as all the other Primarchs are rushing into the Eye of Terror, most of them are rushing into the Eye of Terror, Kurz is just actually grabs the guys and goes, no, let's go this way and party. And it gets worse in Alcander. Like all the fringe worlds of the Imperium are just getting, I mean, Drukhari'd is a better way of putting it.
We have to go into, read the book. The books are, I really like the books.
The books are well written.
No, but I'm saying he gets captured effectively twice.
Yeah, and we'll cover that when we do the Night Lords.
That's what I'm saying, but we're ending him.
So yeah, we're ending him.
He gets caught, escapes, caught.
Well, let's just do it. So real quick, he gets caught by Gilliman, Sanguinius,
and the lion.
They all not really torture him. It's just but what happens is out of the group, Sanguinius is the one who realizes that Kurz actually is a precog. Gilliman and the lion are believe it, but they're a little bit weird.
He does actually, the Night Hunter accidentally does good for the Imperium because he talks shit about the fact that they're currently going to Terra.
Yeah.
Which at that point in time, they didn't know.
Yeah, fun story. Basically, Gilliman, the lion, and Sanguinius didn't know the Emperor was alive at this stage because they actually thought Horus had already won. This is well before the Siege of Terra. And because of Kurz, they realized, oh, he's alive. And they actually pulled their resources to make it so Sanguinius could get back to Terra. That's the only reason he made it back there and the other two didn't. But Sanguinius, before he does this, shoots Sanguinius shoots Kurz in like a pod and just says, well,
that's also the second time.
But
whatever.
Yeah. So what he effectively said was, I believe that what you think is going to come true is going to come true. So there's no point in me killing you right now. Good luck. That assassin will deal with you later.
In my mind, he was petting his white cat as a James Bond villain and goes, we could shoot him in the head right now.
Yeah.
And instead they went, no one guard him. Which makes
for a great story, except for the fact the billions of Imperial citizens who died because Kurz rejoined his legion for a while and went on a murder torture hunt. Yeah.
We'll get into that when we do the Night Lords.
Eventually, Kurz is going completely insane. It's pretty
cool, by the way.
It's well written. But he's eventually on his flagship, completely going insane when M'Shen...
with that effigy of the Emperor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Super horrific of what it's actually made of, but
yeah, it's not important.
Yes. So he gets smoked by a Calidus assassin.
Probably.
I was just saying, maybe.
GW almost never kills somebody, by the way. So you'll notice this on a lot of the Primarchs. But also,
when you get the vision or the story and everything, he gives his bad guy monologue to the assassin. And
as the assassins, then fade to black.
Yeah, and then they fade to black. And he got killed by her, maybe?
Yeah, in case people don't want to read the book, all we know is that there's a vid log showing M'Shen, who's the name of the assassin, leaping at Kurz.
Right.
That's all we know.
Kurz does his whole monologue.
Yeah.
And she's like, good to hear.
It's entirely possible Kurz murdered her.
Yeah. And then just.
And then took her and wore her face for a while.
And then's running a coffee shop somewhere.
Yeah, it's possible.
He's also insane, so maybe.
Yeah. It'd be a weird one for them to bring back. So, all right, that's Kurz. Moving on from Kurz, let's jump to someone who's not dead. We've already covered before, so we can go quick. Mortarion.
Mortarion,
post-Horus heresy, runs back to the Eye of Terror with his legion, and then moped about.
He did go full emo for
him. I mean, just like... So, I always defend Mortarion because...
How do you like Morty more than the Night Hunter?
Well, because I like Morty's intentions. He's a lot more. The Night Hunter just wants to torture and murder people. Morty wants to free people from the shackles of government.
Yeah, it seems better.
Yeah, it's like, he's like, Morty's like, we shouldn't have emperors just telling us what to do at all times, and we should rebel against them. And Nighthawk's like, we should tear people's eyeballs out. And I feel one
You're making a good argument.
I feel one of those are better than the other one.
Fine, if you're going to be like that.
But Morty was sad because instead of overthrowing the evils of the world, he actually enslaved himself and his entire legion to a chaos god.
Yeah, like forever. The problem with Mortarion is we talked about this in the
good intentions.
He had really good intentions. However, every time a fork in the road came where he could have made the right choice, he always made
it was useless at it. So yeah, literally 6,000 years, Mortarion sits. Yep. In the Eye of Terror. And in M36, he makes his first kind of foyer back into foray. I'm going to get corrected on that because I get corrected on my speech now.
I love when they were giving you shit. The Facebook ones are the best.
They're great. They're all accurate. So keep it coming.
Also, props to the dude that was explaining to us the difference between software operating.
That was incredible, therapy. Wasn't it?
Yeah. I was like, we can't talk anymore because you're so much smarter.
Yeah,
than
genuinely. Yeah.
I actually have knowledge now.
Yeah, this is nothing better. So this is one of I do like this. This fun story. M36, there's an ecclesiarchy world named Sancta with an orc invasion. But the orc invasion was weird. They're slow. The orcs are moving around. They're really slow. They're bloated. And these sisters of battle get called in and they just mop up the orcs. Mostly because they're better than space marines, as we learned in the sisters cast. I'm not letting it go.
It's so funny because this is such a comical Roadrunner Coyote thing where the giant X is on the ground.
Oh yeah, orcs just start exploding into nurglings.
Yeah,
I like that. The sisters start shooting the orcs, and the orcs start bursting open, and they're full of nurglings. And then Mortarion arrives on the planet. Yeah.
Because they opened up the box that said, not a trap.
Yeah.
Went, oh, look, it's not a trap, guys.
The reason I'm telling this story is like, it's not that great of a story, but this is important. He does this in M36, and then he goes back into the warp and doesn't appear again for 5,000 years. Yeah,
he does mic drop after this.
Yeah, he's just like, all right.
He's I put up a W, first one in 6,000 years. Yeah. I'll be back.
I'll be back. And he just disappears. And then he doesn't appear again until the time we talked about the Grey Knights, where he kills the Grey Knight Grandmaster, and then Drago kills him and carves said Grey Knight's Grandmaster's name.
Drago doesn't just kill. Drago does what Drago does.
Yeah. But this time, Mortarion doesn't stay in the warp very long. He appears again. And this is where, right around when, his new model came out, obviously.
Well, it's also when the Nurgle became the most powerful god for a while.
Yeah, but when
he's riding
the
wave.
And they launched the Mortarion model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, it's 100% of that, but the Destroyer Plague's going through, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And this is moving us close to modern 40K. So Gilliman is resurrected. Next cast, we're doing that one. Mortarion senses it and comes back in. It starts raging his way back into the Materian. This is all happening kind of intertwined.
So Morty comes back. And I think that Morty might be the most relevant. You can make the argument for Angron, which I'll do.
Yeah, Angron's Morty's the most important. Angron might be relevant because he came out, at time of cast a few months ago.
Your Coral Engine and everything else. Those are the most recent stories.
Yeah, but Angron, the difference is that Angron in the stories always loses. Always.
In every boss battle.
Yeah, he always loses. Whereas Mortarion actually and the Death Guard do have a lot of success.
Well, they make a bigger, I think he, especially in 8th edition.
Yeah, that's
what 8th edition story, it was all Nurgle all the time, and Morty was coming out. So he is one of the movers and shakers of modern 40K. So I think as far as Primarchs go, we'll go Chaos.
Yeah.
Primarchs, he is arguably, we'll put it up there. I think he's really most influential.
Maybe. Yeah, in the last, if you're looking at 8th, 9th, and 10th edition writing, Morty's very, very prevalent all of a sudden.
Especially
Typhus is still ahead.
I would say if you had Typhus in it, I think it's 100%.
Typhus is still the head of the Legion, but people wondering where Morty is right now. Morty took, he did one thing in 11,000 years, and he's done like 15 things since then. Yeah. So he's super engaged and super involved.
And also, again, it was big in the story, so I think it's a big deal for him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's all over the galaxy right now, spreading plagues, waging wars.
He's everywhere.
He's in
a bunch of news stories.
Yeah, he's popping up all over the place. But let's talk about Pederabo. Pederabo joined Horus's rebellion for one reason and one reason only.
To
stick at the Rogal Dorne.
And I understand how he joined Horus so much.
Oh, we're doing a good chunk on Rogal Dorne in the next one.
No!
That's great. Rogal was a master of fortification. Pederabo was a master of siege. They were not brothers. I'm assuming there were some very childish fights these two had, like behind the Emperor's back, just kicking constantly. Each other every time the Emperor turned around. And the thing that's interesting about this is that Pederabo's focus on defeating Rogal kept him loyal to Horus almost all the way to the end, despite the fact that Pederabo was just constantly betrayed.
From the beginning. Yeah,
and also just surrounded by crap he doesn't agree with. We're getting to the Fulgrim story. But Pederabo joined Horus to defeat the Emperor because he did actually feel, to a point, other than just, you know, defeat Rogal Dorne, that the Imperium was going the wrong direction. The idea that the Emperor would ride with his sons into battle and conquer the galaxy and then hand the galaxy over to mortals was something that really bothered Pederabo a lot. And so his viewpoint was that I'm standing with you, Horus, to show that we are the bastions of humanity and we will save it. Fast forward.
To the nightmare ships?
Yeah. Four of his brothers are demon princes.
Yeah. Also, you know, well, he got to see firsthand.
He watched each of them do this.
Yeah. He can see it firsthand, but also like a bunch of their... I mean,
there's like demons walking around. Think about
the Vengeful. I mean, all those kind of things were.
Yeah, he's on the Vengeful Spirit trying to plan out like an attack. And to his left, he looks up and there was just a Nurgle demon just dripping on his battle plan. Mm-hmm. And it's like, at a certain point, I'm not really sure how much on the side of good I'm on.
He should have waited. We're like, wait a second, guys. Are we the bad guys?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, but Rogal Dorne's over there, so let's go. And he does, in the very end, bail, sort of, but it's actually too late.
He does, but it's after everything was...
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is that he bails at the Siege of Terra. Before the Emperor teleported on and fought and killed Horus, Pederabo actually... walked. He grabbed his legion and they left planet. But after this, Pederabo has this kind of moment and he realizes that it's too late for him.
Yeah, but it's not too late to stick it to Rogal Dorne.
Exactly. So I'm using literally correctly. He goes and literally builds a trap for Rogal Dorne because that's what he wants to do. Well, it's one big one.
I know.
He goes and just starts causing a bunch of problems for the Imperium and decides, you know what? I'm going to make it so Rogal Dorne looks really, really bad.
True story.
Yeah.
So, and he does this and he's not completely wrong. Is he really felt that if they didn't fracture and become so chaotic, the forces of chaos didn't become so chaotic.
Yeah, weirdly, the forces of chaos got too chaotic and couldn't survive.
And he's a firm believer in that like we were going to win. It's these guys' fault. Not my fault. Basically, if you would have followed what I said, we won 50-0.
What I like about this story, though, is Pederabo, as he runs away from Terra towards the Eye of Terror, which, by the way, is really hard for me to say those back-to-back. I don't know why. It's always tough for me to say back-to-back. But anyway, runs away from there and then just finds a planet right in the middle of it and builds this 20-square-mile fortress of bunkers, minefields, trenches, and all this stuff, and effectively writes on it, Pederabo here.
Yeah.
And then.
And also, Dorne sucks eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. Dorne sees it and just goes, I'm doing this. And this thing also should have said, totally not a trap.
100%. With comical signs in space, pointing down, going, definitely not a trap.
Yeah. We're just hanging out here, not a care in the world.
Can't believe you found our secret base.
Yeah.
Just.
Turns out Dorne attacks, and the dead center of this 20-square-mile complex is just a big open field. And Dorne gets the big open field and to stick it to Pederabo and gets instantly attacked by the entirety of the Iron Warriors. I mean, the story is the Imperial Fists are holding up dead Imperial Fists as shields. That's how bad this slaughter got.
Things went not great.
Luckily, Gilliman was nearby and said, "That's obviously a trap." And showed up to save them. But
well, as tough as Dorne is, and I have to give this, even though I think he's the 21st ranked Primarch, he's still a bad dude. In this fighting,
Dorne's one of the hardest people to kill in the galaxy.
He is ruining dudes that are around him. Right.
But anyway, Pederabo, after this one, bails out and goes back to the Eye of Terror, where he actually does become elevated to a demon prince.
Which is super weird to me. This is part of the writing that I was never super okay with. Mm-hmm. Because he was anti that for like a while.
Yeah,
And then he became a demon prince. He basically gave this great speech and then went, so where do I get in line to get the demon prince? Yeah. You're like, didn't you just say?
Demon prince upgrade? Yep.
Just 2 seconds ago?
Interesting thing about him is that where from a lore standpoint, Pederabo now becomes this side character.
Yeah, he hasn't done shit since then.
He's done a ton of stuff.
He hasn't done shit that moves the story.
Exactly. Pederabo.
That's my bad on that. He's also been wildly successful on tiny.
For those of you who don't have codexes and never write. So the way the codexes are usually written is they'll have, long multi-paragraph sections talking about something, but then they'll have this other little section, one of my favorite sections, which is just like a timeline of events. And in these timeline events, it'll be like M36 or 447 M36. And it'll be this Pederabo leads an incursion into the Octarius sector. And in the Octarius sector, defeats some guard. And then retreats back to the Eye of Terror. Yep. And this is a common thing throughout the codexes. That's what Pederabo ends up becoming here. He's all over the place. Now, he does like what they call the segment obscurus, which is the area right around the Eye of Terror. He does a lot of stuff there. But almost everything he's doing is like, techno cults, which are, cultists who like technology. He's doing all these little things. It's to aid Abaddon's crusades.
Yeah, I feel that he's just collecting. He became more of a, I don't even know, like a mad scientist almost. Now he's not like Fabius Bile or anything, but like, I don't know. He did this little finger esque.
He's around in the lore, but he's not active in the lore. Although recently we may see him come up because recently with Vashtor the Arcfane coming into the lore, who I like a lot, by the way, quick side note on Vashtor. There's a belief that Vashtor is what caused the Dark Age of Technology. He's a very ancient demon. So anyway, him and Pederabo are kind of buddies. And this is where he is
the broker of.
Yeah, exactly. Of all chaos technology, effectively. Right. And so the Primarch of the Legion who loves siege warfare has aligned with a demon who specializes in corrupted machinery. So for now, while Pederabo is more of almost a myth character in that he exists, you're aware of him.
But the thing is, you don't have a real understanding of what his forces are, how powerful he is anymore.
Yeah, or it's.
Iron Warriors still exist, but also like there's a chance that he could just get all the Iron Warriors together if he wants.
Yeah, this is one of those ones. We should probably be doing this for some of these characters because this is the first one that we've covered who's not dead and doesn't have a model. And that's what Pederabo is. Pederabo could come into the game suddenly with a model and the Iron Warriors being a kind of an independent legion.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know exactly how they broke. I mean, Iron Warriors show up a lot in the Black Legion a lot.
Of course. Yeah.
But like they didn't disband.
In any way, shape, or form. And they're also not like war banded either. They are still very organized under Pederabo.
Yeah.
It's just they're not active.
You just don't know exactly what the deal with that is at that point.
So, but one at Primarch, though, who's very active in the lore is Angron.
Like, all the time.
Really active.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So Angron's got a bit more fun post-heresy. His legion just splinters into a billion pieces post-heresy.
Thank you, Karn.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. We are going to do World Eaters. Mostly, I think, about Karn, because Angron's just, again, another whiny Primarch.
I do love, I'm reading this right from the page. Mm-hmm. So John puts, Angron's ascension to demonhood took a serious toll on his mental faculties. He was butt crazy nuts. He had giant nails in his head that...
Yeah, and then became a demon prince of Khorne.
Yeah, like he was already
wasn't great. Yeah, and it wasn't great.
He put that to 11.
Yeah. At the end of the Horus Heresy at the Eternity Gate was actually where I think sent Angron to a different dimension of anger. So this is one of the stories I like a lot. So they land on Earth. Angron's about to jump down and lead the charge. And Pederabo says, no, you're too nuts. So Horus says, no, you're too nuts. Pederabo's going to do this. Angron starts smashing the capital ship. So they then dump him in the Night Lord's labyrinth, just to kind of where it's point. He just is effectively in this impossible to solve labyrinth, getting angrier and angrier and angrier until they eventually just release him. They just drop him onto the planet.
Yeah, he space falls also.
Yeah. Yeah, falls to Earth, does the superhero landing, and just runs as fast as he can at the gate. Which gets a lot funnier because he gets to the Eternity Gate, which is protected by the Emperor.
And he's a demon.
So he can't breach it, but just is screaming at it, hitting it with a sword. Looks up.
It makes it so much more fun.
Yes. Yeah. Looks up and Sanguinius, the top of the gate. And Sanguinius just starts shit talking him. Like
next level shit talking to.
Yeah, unfortunately, because it would have been better if they just done the Monty Python thing of like, I fart in your general direction. Oh, you know,
second.
But after enough taunting and Angron gets angry enough to be almost exploding, Sanguinius does jump down and agrees
Which
to fight him.
Which makes no sense, by the way, but continue.
Yeah, Angron stabs Sanguinius with his sword. And then Sanguinius reaches over the sword and pulls all of the butcher nails out of Angron's head.
Talking to
his face, which then sends Angron.
I can do the literally to his face. Yeah, he is kissing rage.
Inches away, inches away, looking at him while pulling the nails out of his head, which then causes Angron to, in quote unquote, die. So he goes back into the warp and he misses the rest of the battle.
He is not happy about
this. This is not good. He's not in a good place.
Well, also, this was also super not good for Horus because his legion went banana pants.
Oh, every world eater who was currently on Terra just started killing whatever was next to itself.
Didn't matter.
Oftentimes other world eaters. So fast forward a little bit and the world eaters just completely fall apart and they're not even a legion anymore. They're just war bands who are all fighting to get the most favor for Khorne. Literally 10,000 years of this. Angron appears a couple random times in this period of time.
That's a big one. The first.
Well, this appearance, right. we're going to do the War of Armageddon, but the truth is, this one is no different than the random one that Morty showed up with the orcs.
True, because the first War of Armageddon is actually wildly smaller than the next
one. Yeah, which just didn't involve orcs. That's why. So, but Angron decides while sitting in the warp to unify his legion. And the way he does it is, luckily, a random Space Hulk appears next to the planet he's on, and he just goes...
I love that. Yeah. The space, in my mind, it goes, Space Hulk pulls up and goes, get in, loser.
Yeah, yeah. That's what he does. Angron jumps in, he puts out a call, and world eaters, demons, cultists in the warp all just jump onto the Space Hulk, and they go orc style. They're just on this Hulk, and it just disappears from the immaterium and appears.
I love it. Well, one of my favorite things about Angron is the fact that he makes a effectively wake in real space into the immaterium. So he's in front of the Vanguard. He's pulling the immaterium with him. So there's bloodthirsters but it's him. He legitimately has a wake behind him.
Exactly.
That draws all this.
So let's go to the invasion of Armageddon because it actually is kind of cool. Before Angron ever gets there, cults start popping up. And they're cultists, but these are just these violent cults all over the planet. No one knows they're Khorne worshippers because they're not supposed to know that the chaos exists at this stage, obviously.
They have a bunch of really violent fight clubs.
Yeah, all these. But the second Angron arrives on the planet, all these cults just stop fighting each other, grab their stuff and walk.
Yep.
And they walk up to Angron. They're like, we're with you. And now half the planet plus Angron and all these demons begin fighting. The defenders hold out though for a bit. Not well. I mean, most of them die, but they end up falling back and defending and falling back. And an interesting thing happens. This is an important, this we're telling the story because it actually helps us help tell the story of chaos and incursions into the Materium. Angron is just wrecking shop and they are congregating. All of a sudden, he just stops chasing. And it's not because he has like ADHD and lost focus. It's because the favor of Khorne started to waver.
Because they were winning too big, to be honest.
Yes, yeah, that's what it was. So so all of a sudden, Angron had to stop pursuing and conquering. They had to gather up all these dead bodies and form, you know, monuments to Khorne get Khorne's fear back in. Because without this, all the demons would have started blinking out of existence and Khorne's army would disappear.
He starts effectively making, if you go into the game, he starts making icons.
Yeah.
He's making demonic icons to anchor the demons into the
yeah, because those icons, because you're showing this devotion to Khorne, what they do is they then feed and the energy source, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this invasion, this pause allows the Grey Knights and the Space Wolves to arrive.
And start wrecking shop.
Exactly. So yeah, we can go into this whole fight, but I don't really care.
It is pretty awesome though.
What?
Angron. I mean, he goes into, Angron's at the front of a lot of things right now. I would have to say he's number two. I think Morty is probably more involved in the story, but Angron currently, I mean, he is the person that did the most in the right now.
You're right. Let's go.
Smashing the Coral engine was huge.
So fast forward now, a few thousand more years, and the Great Rift has opened, and Angron appears again in the galaxy. And when he appears, by the way, he slaughters an entire garrison of 1 billion guardsmen and 2,000 warships. So when we say he appears, we don't mean someone cited Bigfoot.
Yeah, there was a lot of video evidence. He's right there.
Yeah, right there. But this Angron's different. So the Grey Knights go to intervene. They blow up a planet this time that Angron's on, but he doesn't really die. He just seems to reappear.
Almost instantly.
Yeah. It's not until he then starts slaughtering the Grey Knights. It's not until one of the Grey Knights utters his true name that they're able to banish him back into the warp. But Angron actually reemerges shortly thereafter. He ends up emerging to fight Dante at one point. Luckily for Dante, the lion has just woken back up.
And shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah, out of nowhere and cuts Angron's head off.
Well, he crushes his head with his shield first.
He crushes his head with his shield and then chops his head off.
Yeah, it was pretty badass, by the way.
But Angron returns again. And this is the new thing right now. Angron has had his head cut off by a Primarch sword. He's had an orbital bombardment, numerous tanks. Angron he will die. You know, he's not invincible, but he reappears. And now every time he reappears, it's exactly 8 weeks, 8 days, and 8 hours after you banish him from the Materium, he reappears fully healed, super pissed off, and with a legion at his back.
They do this in the game. Right now, world leaders, he comes back.
On 3-6s.
On 3-6s, yeah. Yeah,
it's awful.
Yeah, it can be pretty brutal.
Yeah, they can just change a game.
Yeah, I killed him. I had him come back 4 times.
Yeah.
In North Carolina. It was not my favorite.
Yeah. So Angron, in the most current version of the timeline, is the most active of the Chaos.
And he's a problem also because he's being kind of carried over top of his head by Abaddon. Like, you can't tell him what to do, but you can encourage him what to do. And we'll go into a lot of those stories as we talk about this, because Angron is at the forefront of some really big things that happen in the current timeline.
Yep.
He's in all the big battles, period.
Yeah, he's the new one right now. So next, let's jump into Magnus. So much like Mortarion, we spent a good amount of time on Magnus already in the Ahriman casts. So this one will be a little bit quicker. After breaking the walls of the Emperor's Webway project and dooming mankind, Magnus was not done being wrong constantly.
Look, man, he was just trying to send an email.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so Leman Russ breaks Magnus's back over his knee. When he does this, he gives himself and his legion over to Tzeentch. At that moment, the thing is, Magnus died then. His soul was shattered into shards.
I don't even know if he would say he's died. He
died.
He gets shattered.
Well, I say he died because he turned into something else. Died.
I'll give you that. 100%.
All of a sudden, his soul becomes these shards all over the place. And we've discussed these shards before. But each of these shards is a version of Magnus. So if, when we talk about a shard, it's not like, oh, I found some crystal. What you actually find is Magnus just hanging out.
I do like this, only because the Emperor had the same thing happen to him. We'll talk about that much later. You know, we talked a little bit about it and what, but like this again is what happens.
This is what happens when, this is what happens when a powerful being in the warp dies. So the hard part about these shards is that the biggest one obviously went with the Thousand Suns into the Immaterium. But over time, it actually started to deteriorate and Magnus began to fall apart within the warp. So Ahriman actually went out to get the other shards. Now, he came back with four of them. One of them we discussed, it was inside the original Grandmaster Grey Knight.
It's also it's one of Ahriman's one of my favorite characters, but we're not talking about him because these are pretty epic stories. He went on these Herculean trials.
Yeah. And in doing so, though, he did save Magnus. Magnus regained almost all of his power and was able to kind of rejoin the force of chaos in earnest. And because he was actually, on the verge of helping them breach, like, he does this, the castle before Vulcan kicked the crap out of him.
Badly.
Yeah. After the failure of the heresy, Magnus, just like Mortarion, went on a pouting fit. Although I do think Magnus had more reasons to pout because...
Well, Ahriman went, so promise you're not going to be mad.
Yeah.
But...
I found this really cool recipe and I made it and it turned 95% of our legion into dust zombies.
He did get rid of the flesh curse.
Yeah, I did stop the flesh curse though.
100%.
Magnus wasn't happy. That being said... Like Petarabo, Magnus just disappears.
Yeah, they just he's in his tower for a long time. Like
it is 10,000 years. And it's not until he decides out of nowhere to go burn Fenris.
Which is funny in the stories because he just kind of popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, this was not, there was no lead up to this moment. No. He just all of a sudden went, I'm just going to go ahead and remove Fenris. So him and Ahriman align. And they decide,
which was a big deal because he's been persona non grata. Ahriman's like, hey, would you like to show up at the tower? I definitely will not kill you if you show up here. Yeah.
Well, what I do like is that they then decide to go after one of my favorite. Every time GW does this like intellectual property game, it's called Midgardia.
Yeah.
Not Midgard, Midgardia.
What?
Yeah. Hey, patent attorney, what if I add a letter to the end of something? Does that then become mine? I don't know, maybe. Let's find out.
Let's roll the dice, baby.
They invade, and we'll cover this actually probably more in the Thousand Suns cast, and because we already covered it a little bit in the Ahriman cast. We'll cover this more on the Space Wolves cast. We did it already in the Ahriman casts, but we'll do a recycle then. Long story short, they sacrifice this planet of Midgardia by killing everyone and everything there. Prospero reemerges in the warp. Well,
the copy of...
Because Prospero became the planet of sorcerers when it went into the Materium, and now it came back out of the Materium, so it went back to being called Prospero.
Yeah, it's also kind of half in. You're like, it's a copy, possibly.
Yeah, and the next piece for Magnus is when Gilliman comes back to life.
Which is funny, because I'm going to throw this out there for everybody. In the writings, it feels like everybody got... an instant alert.
Yeah, when Gilliman came back, every single Chaos God. Interestingly, though, not when the Lion did.
Yeah.
And I think it's because the Lion was never dead. He was just in that pocket dimension, whereas Gilliman was effectively dead and then was brought back to life.
It's just like, as soon as the G-Man came out, all of the gods went, we got to go do something about this.
We're going to cover G-Man in the next one. I do think part of it also is the armor. Is because Gilliman was now, especially for Nurgle, Gilliman was now ultra resistant to all the chaos powers.
That's true.
And they may have spent like,
he's got the armor of the Emperor.
The armor of the Emperor is a hard no. That thing has to go away. So anyway, Magnus detects that Gilliman is alive and decides no. That's actually kind of a cool thing. Magnus realizes that Gilliman is using the webway to travel, from McCraig all the way back to Terra. Magnus can't travel in the webway directly, but neither should Gilliman. So Magnus realizes that if he just kind of follows Gilliman's wake within the webway won't kill him and he can do it. So he begins following him there. And his actual plan was to follow Gilliman back to Terra, pop out and kill the Emperor.
Yeah, except for
Gilliman's not an idiot.
Hold on, watch this though. One plus one, carry the one. Oh, yeah, Magnus has won 0 times.
Yeah, Magnus never wins at anything. Gilliman totally knew he was being followed because it's still Magnus following him, a giant red one-eyed monster with horns and wings. Turns out it stands out. He's also surrounded in this journey by Eldar, including Harlequins. So who are the masters of the Webway? And so anyway.
You're like, man, what is your main power? I'm the Lord of Psychics. And he went, oh, cool. Well, there's like a bunch of Sisters of Silence here.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't go well when they landed. So Gilliman takes a left turn, and instead of landing on Terra, lands on Luna. Magnus attacks and is just about to kill Gilliman when, as we covered in the prior episode, all the Sisters of Silence show up and just being around Magnus suck his soul out of it, like through his eyes.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, so he has to run away. Moving into the most recent, though, Magnus now has a new goal, and it's a really, really stupid one.
He's got a volcanic lair to do this.
This is the dumbest thing. Magnus.
Again, it's volcano lair. This is some Dr. Evil shit.
This is just so dumb. But wait, Magnus has decided that he's going to turn humanity into a psychic race. And what he's done is on Prospero, he's built his own Astronomicon. And every psyker in the galaxy is aware of it, and they're drawn to it. His goal is to bring all the psychers of the galaxy to Prospero, and then from there, use this psychic awakening to convert all of humanity.
He has no defensive plan for doing this. He basically makes his own little new Astromonicon, and then is surprised when people show up.
Let's dive into it. It's quite funny. He builds a giant beacon for all psychers anywhere in the galaxy to come join him on a planet that already got wrecked once by a space marine invasion. And the Grey Knights are just like, so he's over there, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right. And they grab Dark Angels on the way because they're like, look, we can't bring the Space Wolves because last time they were here, they went a little overboard. So like
those dudes are weird,
man. Yeah. Like, they're just like, actually, you know what? It's not that. It's the Grey Knights went, look, we want to bring the Space Wolves, but they don't like us.
Like really.
That's actually more likely what it was. They're like, we need to have this battle end and not just get punched in the back.
Is Logan still there? Yeah, let's.
We're good. Like, we're good. Hey, Dark Angels, can you come with us for a minute? And so they go, and as always, Magnus loses.
Because he set up absolutely no defense.
Yeah.
It's insanity that he put up a giant galaxy-wide visible beacon and then was just like, what? You guys are here? Like,
That's weird. Who knew?
Can't believe it.
Can't believe it.
And he's supposed to be like one of the smartest.
All right. But let's go from him to another Primarch who I don't like, Fulgrim.
You know who doesn't lose all the time? Fulgrim.
He loses all the time.
He's got multiple victories. I don't know. Let's say like you're Bobby G and you weren't around for a while.
Live now.
Talk about another dude without
one of them has a model.
We'll talk about he does. 30K.
I know.
It's also awesome.
Maybe the best model in the game. Yeah. All right. Let's do a quick recap. During the Heresy, Fulgrim had a theme, and that was being controlled and possessed by different things over and over and over again.
His theme was trying to be the best at everything. I love that you're just like, screw this.
Really? Okay. How many times did Fulgrim get possessed or controlled?
No, you're correct. Like, you're not seven? Wrong.
Like, it was just constant with him. Like, I want to be, I'm the master of perfection. My hair is magnificent. I'm the greatest. This, oh, a demon's got control of me again.
Yeah.
All right. I beat that demon. Oh, it happened again.
He did fail a lot of saves.
Yeah. He's just constant. Like, and all I do is roll a 2. On a D20. And he's still every time.
With a reroll. Yeah, it's like, nah. Yeah.
Nope. I rolled a 1. Okay. So over and over again, he is just, I just think he's just a child. That's why I don't like him. He's all impulse and he never takes any blame for anything.
He's really pretty.
Fine.
Well, I mean, he used to be. He's now a giant serpent monster.
The big thing, and we covered this back in episode 7, but the big change for Fulgrim was actually with Petarabo. This is when he just screws Petarabo over royally. He tells Petarabo that they need to go on a buddy quest together to go pick up this super special sword. And Petarabo goes, cool. And while they're going there, he says to him, hey, can you put this weird cloak on? And Pettirabo again goes, yeah, sure thing,
sure,
buddy.
Man. Apparently, what could possibly happen?
Apparently, I'm a complete moron. Anyway, the cloak actually was sapping his energy. We did this for a while in episode 7 with a lot of energy, so go back and listen to that if you want. But in the end, it was a trap, but luckily some other loyalist Marines show up and they undermine the trap. Long story short, Pettirabo goes from I'm about to die to I got all my strength back and takes a look at Fulgrim and goes, nah, and hits him with a hammer so hard that Fulgrim's body splits in half.
Yeah, but it splits in half in a cool, please someone do CGI of this.
This is the cool part. This is the cool part. Fulgrim splits in half and then rises back up as a giant purple snake. Yep, that's what I said. With forearms and wings.
And wings. Cool yeah. wings, too.
There is a model for this. It's a 30K model. It's one of the best things you'll ever see. I will not own it because I'm not going to paint that
also,
nightmare.
Also, not sure how you're going to travel with it because those wings are gigantic.
Well, it also isn't playable.
Right now.
In 30K.
Look, we're going to get Fulgrim this year. Sorry, not this year. 2025.
Yeah.
Mark it down.
Fine. We'll get to that at the end of this. There's a good likelihood Fulgrim's coming back.
Yes.
We just saw it this week, actually. Anyway, as a Siege of Terra begins, Fulgrim and his Legion at first are super into it and then just get bored. Because you know what? Fighting the Loyalists was hard. They had like guns and they'd hit you.
You know it's not hard? Going to the mall.
Yes. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I laugh about this a lot. Like, they just decided to go and just jack up, not just Terra, by the way, everywhere. They just left.
Yeah, they just grabbed as many slaves as they possibly can from the most undefended area, any place that had little or no resistance.
Well, yeah, they went to everywhere that on Earth. They went to everywhere that wasn't the Imperial Palace. Yeah. And then they just boogied out of system and just stopped off at random, like, Agri World or whatever.
Yeah, just kept grabbing more people.
Yeah. Where this actually matters a lot from a lore standpoint is that Fulgrim ends up building this massive base back in the Eye of Terror because he's got all of these slaves, trillions of them, and his forces bailed on the Siege of Terra.
Well, that's the Emperor's Children is still legit.
It's still legit, but at the end of the heresy, they were the most powerful force in the entire Immaterium. What ends up happening, though, is because Fulgrim's useless at everything, he starts torturing and killing all these captains, starts running out of them. So then he begins what's called the Legion War, which is when all the legions started fighting each other in the Eye of Terror. And he started it because he had the largest legion and he could go steal all their people.
Yep. Also, it made no sense because he could have just left the Eye of Terror and grabbed people that weren't other Chaos Space Marines.
So let's get to the two biggest moments of Fulgrim. Actually, one hasn't happened yet, but we'll start with this one. Fulgrim and his legion keep popping into the Materium and grabbing people, large sections of people. And Gilliman is just like, no. Like, nope, well, not having this.
G-Man kind of did a whole detective thing on this to figure out where he was going to go.
Yeah, and tracks him down. And eventually, Gilliman and the Ultramarines corner Fulgrim and the Emperor's Children, and they're going to kill them, except for one little problem. Gilliman is a Primarch.
Yeah.
Fulgrim's
a demon Primarch. Also, he didn't know that he was going to be facing a demon Primarch. Yeah.
Gilliman doesn't know what Fulgrim looks like. And now this massive demon snake with forearms.
He's huge.
Yeah. And he slits Gilliman's throat with a poison blade.
Just slit his throat. Slit it with a poison.
Yeah. And we know what poison does to Space Marines.
I knew that was coming. I walked right into it.
I mean, like, literally, like, right into it. I don't know why. As a reward for this, though, and this is around M32, I think 31, 32. Slaanesh is so happy with Fulgrim that she builds Fulgrim his own little play center.
It's like
within
a pleasure dimension or
and
something.
Where Fulgrim sits there and he can do whatever he wants with it. And he does things like it conjures up old battles that he used to be in to wage them again. Every glory of his life, he's been sitting in this area just reliving it.
Well, he's basically sitting on the holodeck just making shit up.
What happens, so interesting though, is that when Gilliman, gets resurrected, Fulgrim doesn't appear. directly. Instead, he possesses one of the members of the Council of McCraig and just starts shit-talking him and telling him that, you know, I'm going to hunt you down. And this, whenever the second you make a mistake, I'm going to capitalize on that mistake, and it's going to be the downfall of you and the Imperium.
Yeah, but also, as always with a lot of the Chaos Forces, you know what he could have done? Not just told him his plan and go, so Gilliman went, oh, thanks for telling me that. It would have been super hard to weed this out.
Yeah.
But now that you've told me exactly what you're going to do.
Then I guess I'm good now.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to fall into that.
Now let's do a quick story that no one probably saw coming, except unless you read Treason the Infinite.
Good. Also, good book.
Really good book. So this is actually one of the funnier stories. We've covered before Fabius Bile was the main apothecary.
For the Emperor's Children, which is Fulgrim's Legion.
Yeah. Fabius is, at one point, tried to clone all the Primarchs, and Abaddon felt differently about that. He comes back years later to try it again, and this time he only goes after Fulgrim. And it's part of this is because actually Fabius doesn't like what Fulgrim is. It's kind of, I mean, Fulgrim's terrifying. And he actually successfully reclones Fulgrim in his original form, but with all the genetic memories of new Fulgrim. And this part of the book's actually pretty
weirdly cool. Without chaos corruption.
Yeah, no chaos corruption, but that would actually make sense. The corruption's in the soul. So he's just doing the genes. The genes had memories and whatever. Fulgrim and Fabius sit around and just talk for a while. And they're talking and they're talking. And as new Fulgrim comes to terms with what's happened, he makes a vow that he's going to go and undo the legacy of his clone brother and effectively save the Imperium, to which Fabius is in his head going, yeah, this is, makes a lot of sense. But also, you're the exact same person as that one. You're totally going to follow demonhood, and we're going to have two of you. So he sets a trap and gives clone Fulgrim two Treason the Infinite to add to his collection. So technically, as of right now, there are two Fulgrims.
Also, they do nothing with that. Like, he basically goes,
this is a funny story.
Thanks for the Fulgrim, deuces. Yeah. Also, I'm really wondering what they're going to do with Fulgrim, because I think that he might be, and people can poo on this or love it or whatnot, he might be the most powerful demon Primarch. Like, physically, like...
Oh, very much so. I mean, it'll be... So for those who don't know, Brad and I have been playing info, the GW's been teasing a bunch of Emperor's Children things, and like literally this week, not that it matters when you guys are going to hear this, because it's going to be months... So you listen to this a month to years ago, but they just teased the Shoulder Pauldrons. So now we know the Emperor's Children Legion's coming out next year. Right. So the expectation is that we'll get a Fulgrim model, which would be super cool.
It's just in his lore, he's lightning fast. He always was a really good duelist, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It'll be hard, having seen Angron stats, how you do Fulgrim stats.
Yeah, like what... Plus, he's also really just good at smoking groups of things. So I'm wondering what
they're... So is Angron. I know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's going to be a tough one for GW to write. That's all. Their problem. All right, but let's get to Brad's favorite part of the cast.
Oh, shit.
Lorgar!
I always say that Grogu Dorne's my least favorite, but that's
And then you remember that Lorgar exists?
I don't even count him. He sucks so much.
Yeah. So let's do Lorgar real quick.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Not real quick. So Lorgar is the largest catalyst for the Horus Heresy. He is
the catalyst for the Horus Heresy.
The Warrior Lodges, which are still a bad idea, Brad.
Whatever.
The Serpent Lodge.
I love that we had this kind of this argument before we had the cast, but about modern things.
Yeah.
And then you reference it again. Yeah.
Still wrong on this one. He was the one who convinced everyone to take Horus the Serpent Lodge. He was also before the creating cults to the Emperor. In fact, the entire Imperial Truth, or sorry, the Imperial Creed has origins with Lorgar.
He wrote the book.
Yeah, no. I know. Let's say Lorgar is everything.
He wrote the book.
Well, he wrote a book, and then they plagiarized the F out of it to, you know.
I'm just saying, when you say someone wrote the book, Lorgar's like, I did write the book.
That's fair. Anyway, as the heresy expands, Lorgar starts to struggle with Horus. Lorgar gets jealous about the fact that all the chaos gods like Horus more, even though he's the one doing all the stuff for the chaos gods.
Yes, because Lorgar is born to be middle management. Yeah.
So Lorgar has this great plan of using a demon to control Fulgrim, which is a great plan because it happens easily, constantly.
He must have like just disadvantage versus...
it's the intelligence of two. You know, it's like,
so you're possessed again? Whatever.
Just someone go get the bucket.
Should we ask who he's possessed by? Yeah,
it's not even interesting anymore. Yeah. The story's getting boring. So, but the part that's funny is that Fulgrim, while possessed, the person possessing him, because it's not Lorgar, betrays Lorgar, and Lorgar finds himself standing 1v1 against Horus.
Yeah, that doesn't go super great.
Yeah, Horus is just puts a butt whooping down and kicks Lorgar out of the heresy, effectively.
And this is actually worth, I feel, was he would have rather. He doesn't want to die, but also Horus thinks so little of Lorgar that he doesn't even think this is a problem. And he's kind of right, actually.
Well, he's right, because the thing is, the problem is Erebus and Laak don't leave.
Right.
So Horus still has... Care. Yeah, he still gets all the word bearers. It's minus Lorgar and a small group. Lorgar, though, obviously ends up pretty quickly back in the warp. And over time, the rest of the word bearers also rejoin the warp. And once back there, they all still agreed with Lorgar. Like, even Erebus does. They weren't backstabbing each other. Just Erebus at the end was like, I don't want to get my ass kicked by Horus, so I'm going to hang out with him.
And these are, I have to give them this. They are the most pure devotees of the Chaos Gods.
And from a lore standpoint, I think they're the most important as far as GW setting the stage of what is life's like in the Imperium. I think they're the most important chaos cult, and I'll explain why in a minute. It's because I just used the word chaos cult. Lorgar sucks at combat, but the chaos gods loved him, and they eventually make him a demon prince, a very, very, very powerful demon prince, not at fighting. But what Lorgar is good at is spreading chaos. And that's why he's so important. If you're the Inquisition, a word bearer incursion is the worst thing.
Oh, they've got also such a knack for getting these grassroots operations and instantly getting demons to them.
Yeah. And that's what makes the word bearers so great, because they're the most powerful in this world, in this kind of realm. They speak more clearly to psychers than any other group, you know, whereas Nurgle is waiting for you to suffer. Khorne's waiting for combat. You know, Tzeentch is waiting for a desire for things. Lorgar is just creating those things.
Well, he's fantastic at subversive because he convinces you that, hey, man, you have a problem with your psychics. I can help by blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh man,
you've got a
trick?
Full cult. Yeah.
Right.
And that's so my opinion is that the word bearers are actually creating the vast majority of the cults all across the Imperium, which sucks for the Imperium.
Well, they're also just not willing to fight, which is weird for a Space Marine Legion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It's because they're more like they're word bearers. That's what they're doing. They're trying to spread the word of chaos throughout the Imperium. The greater concern of the Materium, though, is a change recently in Lorgar. So while in the Eye of Terror, Lorgar went on a literally multi-millennia meditation. No one knows about what or why.
He went on a spirit journey.
Yeah, but recently he woke up. And ever since he woke up, he's been seen in the Materium. And he hasn't been seen in the Materium. Also, we were talking about him like raising cults. He was doing all that from the Immaterium. Lorgar hasn't been seen in the Materium since before the end of the Heresy.
Yeah, that's with 30.
Yeah, so over 11,000 years, there are reports of him now leading these horrifically large, you know,
well,
word bearer legions, preaching and spreading the word of chaos.
One of my favorite word bearer stories, and this tells you how many, just to give an example of how influential and widespread, the word bearers were assaulting a giant fortress and couldn't get through it. They couldn't bring the walls down. So they had a million cultists die, and they made a ramp out of dead bodies and drew
and just went up and over, up and over it. Yep. Yeah, that's the word bearers. So right now, I would laugh hysterically, by the way, because we were just talking about them having a Fulgrim model. If there was no Fulgrim model, but there was a Lorgar model.
Yeah. Oh my God, no. Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
Good news, everybody. We're getting a new demon prince. Is it Fulgrim? No. Is it?
Boo. Yeah.
Is it Pederabo? Also, no. It's not Lorgar, is it? Oh, yeah, it's totally Lorgar. It's just a G.I. Joe.
God. I hate him. He sucks so much.
All right. That was mean making Brad talk about Lorgar. So let's let Brad talk about something he actually likes.
Aferius and Omegon.
Yeah. So we're going to do a deep dive into Alpha Legion, obviously, because they are complicated as hell. So
also tons of contrasting.
Yeah. We're going to give you the lore. This is what I'm giving you now is all canon. But there's also a lot of canon that says all the canon I'm about to tell you is not true.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
They've retconned the shit out of this.
So let's do it in the simple fashion. The Alpha Legion doesn't have one Primarch. They have two Primarchs, identical twins, Alpharius and Omegon. I do hate this for a very simple reason. These are 3 meter tall beings who weigh 2 tons, but apparently they're very, very sneaky.
I mean, Alpharius was just on Terra going, hello, fellow guys.
There's also there's a belief that they may have both been on like Horus's flagship at the same time, or one guy just peeking from behind a curtain. Like, it's just stupid.
The Steve Buscemi beam.
Yeah.
Just hello, fellow Marine.
Alpharius, that guy looks just like you. No, he doesn't.
No.
That is a regular space marine. He's twice the size of everyone other space marine. I said, is your name Tim? I believe it's Tim. Everyone say hi to Tim. Definitely not my brother, Tim.
Absolutely no chance.
Like I said, it's really cool, and you read it quickly, and then you think about it for a little bit, and it's like, this makes no sense. How do you have a sneaky Primarch? But going forward, we'll just use the term Alpharius to make life easier. Joins Horus, but interestingly, not for the Chaos Gods. It's because they felt the Emperor was leading humanity down the wrong path, and they wanted a course correction for the Imperium, and so thought Horus was the way to do that.
And then there's also the non-canon, which says, because we've got stories of one of the two brothers was actually trying to sabotage Horus from inside.
There we go. Well, and there's a lot of this. It gets weird because they kind of write them out to be, well, maybe they're the good guys. Yeah. They murder a lot of people.
Oh, a lot, because they're also super sneaky, and they spring out and kill a bunch of people.
Yeah, and it's all because they did take a meeting with the Cabal, more on them and an aforementioned cast. So the Alpha Legion gets sent out by Horus, and they're sent out to go deal with the Space Wolves and the Dark Angels. It's just stupid. Like, they do a surprise attack on the Space Wolves. They do a surprise attack on the Dark Angels. They're all over the galaxy, causing nightmares.
And again, this is where, again, you go back to maybe one of them was the good guy, because they F up all of these things and give them advance notice for the Imperium that this is coming.
Yeah.
It's their fault.
I don't hate it. I just find this. It's like the timeline when you're reading Alpha Legion stuff is so hard.
Yes, because some of it doesn't make sense in where the time is.
Yeah, the books are in. But anyway, we'll go to a couple of key parts of this. As we get near the end of the Horus Heresy, the Alpha Legion are part of Horus's plan for invading the Sol system. So Pluto, which is still not a planet in the 31st millennia, is armed to the teeth with fortresses and guns. And the Alpha Legion was sent there to kind of go soften it up. So what they did, this is what Alpha Legion does, they just infiltrated the Imperial Fists. They just went in there, you know, wore their faces effectively, and wandered around. All at once, this is before the invasion of Sol, by the way, all at once.
By a lot.
Yeah, all these cells throughout the Sol system activate. And ships are blowing up. Even on Terra, there's entire factories are going. Actually, I think there was a ship that fell out of orbit at one point, and there's all this massive confusion. But the real goal was Pluto, because they were actually wanting to disable a bunch of the weapon systems on Pluto to make it easier for them to come in.
I mean, Pluto is a rock surrounded by satellite destruction. Yes. Yeah.
And Alpharius actually leads this one head on, going into Pluto. The problem is, as much as Brad does not like Rogel Dorn, he will admit two things about Rogel Dorn. One, he's very strategically intelligent.
He's also a badass.
And he can fight. So he, I mean, I would put top Rogel Dorn in the top two or three of all the Primarchs.
If you're talking about just somebody that's going to punch you. Yeah.
Hand to hand, who's better non-demon, not non-possessed, who's better than Rogel Dorn in hand-to-hand combat?
Maybe the lion.
Yeah.
I mean, Sanguinus doesn't list anymore.
He doesn't die. But yeah.
The problem with the Vulcan is it just depends on which Vulcan you get, which story you get.
That's true, yeah. That's how
Vulcan is a wild, how much does the plot need me to be tough?
Yeah, that's fair. So in this situation, yeah, Alpharius is not in a good situation here. He does tell Dorne, by the way, that I'm not doing this stuff to benefit Horus. I'm doing it to benefit the galaxy at large.
Well, we're going to cover this when we do the Alpha Legion, but like they're... whole big thing is that this needs to happen so we don't lose to chaos.
Yeah. And Rogel Dorn hears those words and punches him right in the face.
Yeah. He does not even let that sink in. He's like, good to hear.
And I want to explain to you, there are two Primarchs fighting. Here's how the fight goes down. Rogel beats Alpharius silly, cuts both of his hands off.
He runs him through.
Then picks up the spear that those hands were holding, jams it through Alpharius, and then takes his own sword out and cuts his head off. Alpharius has died.
He's gonna need some Bactine for that.
Yeah. Every time Rogel Dorn fights, he just pummels whoever he's fighting. Rogel's kind of cool, although he gets whiny later on.
Yes.
Throughout the rest of the Horus Heresy, Alpha Legion are next to Horus, but near the end, as they're getting into the Siege of Terra, Alpha Legion noticeably significantly absent from it. Heresy ends, and Alpha Legion just move to the right side of the galaxy at the end of the Heresy. They don't go back into the Eye of Terra. They go out into the right side of the galaxy. The east. I'm just going to keep calling it the right side.
I was just about to say, I'm waiting for it. You mean the east side?
That's the right side. There is no east side. There's no magnetic. Show me magnetic north and we can do this. It's a lazy thing to call it the east. Well, not lazy. It's a naval thing. I've been corrected enough times that, it's a naval thing. Everything goes northeast, southwest, but I'm still going right side. So as they're doing the Alpha Legion are out on the right side of the galaxy, kind of doing no one knows what. They're causing problems, don't get me wrong, but there's no rhyme or reason behind it. But they then eventually get a little bit close to the Ultramarine territory. And Alpha Legion, everyone seems to dislike the Ultramarines. You'll notice this a lot in the stories, and I think this is more just because the Ultramarines wear plot armor, but the Alpha Legion do get a little bit too close to Ultramarine territory.
And then they get their asses kicked by the Ultramarines.
Yeah, and then the Gilliman just goes, nah. Gilliman and the Legion surround the Alpha Legion and pursue them and actually do successfully, again, kill the Primarch. This time, Alpharius is dead. However, there's a key piece to this. In the lore, every time a Primarch dies, it has an incredible effect on the Legion.
Psychically wrecks.
Yeah, wrecks them. This is where the Red Thirst and the Blood Angels comes from Sanguinius dying. The Alpha Legion were completely unfazed. In fact, the entire plan of Gilliman's attack here was I'm going to hit them, I'm going to kill Alpharius, and when Alpharius is dead, the whole Legion will collapse. The entire Legion was like, wait, who's dead? Yeah, whatever. And in fact, they actually pushed the Ultramarines back because they were not ready for this level of counterattack.
And one of the biggest things on this is in the game, HQ, your warlord could shift to each of your characters, which was a great thing because effectively they're saying with the Alpha Legion, you're not sure who's actually in charge, who's going on, because they do the whole I am Spartacus with everybody.
But what I love in the lore is, because in the lore that they've kind of leaned into this a little bit, where now the Imperium is kind of wondering, are these guys dead? So they decide, the Lords of Terra, Brad's buddies.
Boo.
By the way, did you see the Discord? I referred to you as being too short to be a Lord of Terra.
I did not.
Someone said we should make a t-shirt of Brad as a Lord of Terra, and I said he's too short.
He'd have to be this.
He has to be a low Lord of Terra. He couldn't be a high Lord of Terra. He'd have to be
just have me standing in a box.
The Apple cart, the Apple crate.
What's going on, guys?
Anyway, the Lords of Terror authorized 6 Vindicares to go hunt down and kill Alpharius if he existed. 5 years later, one of the Lords of Terror opened his refrigerator, because apparently they have those, and found all 6 of the heads of those Vindicare assassins in the freezer. And this is how the Alpha Legion have always worked. Every time you kill one of the leaders, instantly another one pops up. Yep. And steps in. I think they're perpetuals. I think Alpharius and Omega and Omegon or an Omegan, whatever the name is, are either they're not two, that's actually one, but they're perpetual, or they're just two perpetuals.
I think they send clones and or simulacrums.
Who's cloning them and how many clones do they have?
They show up at too many places across the galaxy at the same time.
That's true. So maybe there are multiple. It's a weird thing where I think they've got some goofy powers that haven't been fleshed out like so much in official writing so far. Namely, I do believe they're perpetuals, though.
They've gotten wrecked.
That's what
both
I'm saying.
Of them, you know. I mean,
they both got ultra killed. And there's an idea of maybe they've died numerous times because we don't know what Alpha Legion's up to most of the time. And I could see them being these perpetuals who are just constantly coming back. And that's also would explain why in the lore, the Alpha Legion tends to operate in the fringes. Of the Lord. We don't really know what the Alpha Legion's up to
at all.
But when they do show up, they show up in mass. They're in giant force. So it's quite possible these two are pulling the strings behind it.
They could be just been there the whole time kind of thing. This is one of the ones. I'm actually I'd love to have them flesh this out a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Alpha Legion's awesome as hell. So, but anyway, that's it. That's the end of the Traitor Primarchs. Next week, we're going to get into the loyalist ones, which means Rogaldorn. Because there is no, we're going to do Rogaldorn party time because no one parties like Rogaldorn because Rogaldorn does not party.
Yeah, you are right. He is the end of fun.
Exactly. There's fun police and then there's Rogaldorn. Rogaldorn oversees the fun police.
Yes. And he thinks they're having too much fun.
Exactly. So with that, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.